This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, April 13th, 2018. I'm Kyle Kelms. A big thank you to the Apparel Merchandising and Product Development Program at the University of Arkansas for inviting Antoinette Grajeda and me to co-host last night's annual Enclothed Fashion Show. Among other things, we learned about the clothes of the future that might contain biomedical sensor data that could be included in the clothes that we'll wear in the future and give us information about our heart rate and our oxygen saturation levels. Thanks again for the invitation. We'll begin this Friday edition of Ozarks Large with Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics, who can tell us all about many things, perhaps even oxygen saturation levels. He joins us from a coffee shop in downtown Fort Smith. Happy Friday the 13th, Michael.
Yeah, yes. Friday the 13th, that's what I was going to say. But, there's some things I'm not sure I want my clothes telling me. And if they do, I hope they don't talk out loud.
No.
So that could be embarrassing.
No, the clothes of the future we saw last night, this fashion show, did not talk out loud. I think they would just tell you as you are going about your business.
Yeah, because my clothes, if they talked out loud, it would be a lot of, this boy's gassy. So stay away.
Well, this gives me an unexpected segue to our first subject, which is the discussion of a proposed prepared food tax in Fort Smith.
Yeah, speaking of a lot of gas. So here we go again with a prepared food tax. You know, the city tried it several years ago and got spanked politically, just put it on. And then there was a citizen vote, and citizens put it on a ballot and voted it down pretty quickly. Now, we come again, and the reason is that the city is funding to the tune of about $777,000, the convention center. Prepared food tax would raise roughly about $1.8 million a year, so they could use that to pay for the convention center. Who knows what else they would do with the money. But first of all, Kyle, I think that it's interesting the board bringing this up at this point, because it does nothing to help push the millage vote that Fort Smith Public Schools are pushing. I mean, that millage vote's going to have a tough enough time as it is. You give opponents or people sitting on the fence another tax to talk about, and it just gives them reason or even more reason to vote against the millage. So from that standpoint, it's unfortunate. And then I think they're going to have three hurdles to even get it moving forward. And I don't see it being put on a ballot or an act this year, but those three hurdles are, number one, it's a tax. And number two, the leadership, the same leadership that's responsible for the convention center, which has been criticized, right or wrong, for its handling of the convention center, for recruiting events, they would be the ones receiving the tax money. And then the third issue is this consent decree that the city's under, that $480 million consent decree, which has raised water and sewer fees and will probably continue to see some increases in that. So as much as the city of Fort Smith probably needs a prepared food tax to help promote tourism and help promote its growing tourism and other cultural amenities, I'm going to be very, very surprised if citizens approve this in the near future.
Well, we're talking about funding a major piece of square footage in Fort Smith.
Right.
Another one that was in the news and not Talk Business and Politics this week is the former headquarters for Golden Living. It's now for sale, I think 318,000 square feet. What does this mean in the immediacy that this building's up, and what does it mean for the future of Golden Living having any sort of existence or footprint in the Fort Smith metro?
Well, those are all good questions, and the problem is there aren't no definitive answers. It just creates more uncertainty. And you mentioned it, this large 318,000 square foot office space. And look, this is Class A, very unique office space. This isn't, you don't go down to American Steel and throw a building up. This is, and it's wired to the top. I mean, it's probably one of the more unique buildings in Arkansas. So finding just one tenant or one person is going to be tough. You know, it took years to find someone to buy the Whirlpool plant. It took years for someone to buy the Mitsubishi building. So this is going to be another case, maybe even more complicated because of its the nature of the building and where it's located. I think, and I'm working to get to answer your questions, I think it's more likely, because the building's also for lease, not just for sale, but that they'll find several tenants to go, may end up being a multi-tenant facility. But the uncertainty has been around really since 2016, when Golden Living began to sell off a lot of their divisions. They sold three major divisions in 2016. Employment, which there was around, it was over 1,000. Some people say it got as high as 1,500. But in 2016, it was down around 900. Now it's around 300 to 400, depending on who you want to believe. And so that, look, that's a big hit to the Fort Smith economy. We had the University of Arkansas Little Rock conduct a study back in 2016 in which they calculated the loss of 600 jobs there, which is really what we've seen, would be a negative 2% loss to the overall labor income for the Fort Smith metro area. 2% may not sound like a lot, but for a region that struggled to get on its feet, it's not welcome news.
Well, we can follow what answers you do get at talkbusiness.net. These stories and others there. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. Let me know if you get some of those clothes with biomedical sensors, and we'll talk about that next week.
All right, we'll do. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
President Trump weighs a military strike against Syria.
We're looking very, very seriously, very closely at that whole situation, and we'll see what happens, folks. We'll see what happens.
And what will happen to the Russia probe? Trump takes aim again at the Robert Mueller investigation after an FBI raid on his personal lawyer. Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition Saturday, tomorrow morning from 7 until 9 on 91.3 KUAF. This is a Friday the 13th edition of Ozarks at Large. If China were to impose its latest rounds of tariffs on the United States, Arkansas economic experts say the state's farmers would likely take a hit. Meanwhile, if the U.S. imposes its steel and aluminum tariffs on China, Arkansas manufacturers could experience the same thing. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek explains.
Arkansas farmers and manufacturers are facing the potential of finding themselves between a rock and a hard place. The rock is the announcement made by President Trump last month, increasing tariffs on imported steel and aluminum. The hard place is China's retaliatory response in an escalating war of what has for now been mostly words. Although last week, China did enact tariffs on about $3 billion worth of U.S. imports.
The tariffs and everything with China are very important to Arkansas farmers and Arkansas agriculture. We've already seen with some of the things that have gone on with solar panels and washing machines. We saw a tariff put on sorghum, which has basically banned that. That's the largest market for U.S. sorghum. Arkansas farmers produce that as well as farmers around the rest of the United States.
That's Matt King, the director of market information and economics at the Arkansas Farm Bureau. He's referring to the tariffs President Trump imposed on imported washers and solar panel components back in January. 2 weeks later, Chinese officials launched an anti-dumping probe into U.S. sorghum exports. The industry has taken a hit since then. And in last week's announcement, China included U.S. pork on the list of goods that will face an additional 25% tariff. Now China is eyeing soybeans and cotton after President Trump announced plans to apply tariffs on about 1,300 Chinese exports to punish the country for its theft of intellectual property. Here's Matt King again.
The largest of those is soybeans. We export about $14 billion worth of soybeans to China every year. If you look out, as you drive across the state of Arkansas, about one out of every three rows of soybeans in the U.S. ends up in China. One-third of everything that the U.S. farmers produce ends up in China.
And King says Arkansas could take a harder hit because so much of what farmers here produce ends up on the export market. In the case of soybeans, they amount to $1 billion worth of trade for the state.
$1 billion worth of trade is at risk.
The University of Arkansas Division of Agriculture estimates a 25% tariff on soybeans could mean the crop would lose 14% of its value and exports would decline by 19%. While the tariffs haven't been imposed yet, King says the uncertainty was enough to rattle markets and growers alike.
We saw last week when these tariffs were announced, farmers went to bed. Soybean prices were about $10.50, somewhere in that neighborhood. They woke up, they were down the limit, almost less than $10. When you wake up and you see over 5% of the value of your product just declined overnight.
King says 60% of the world's soybeans are imported by China. In addition to the U.S., they import soybeans from Brazil and Argentina. And while Brazil's production is up, Argentina is experiencing a drought. So markets have bounced back. King says something else has helped as well.
One of the good things right now that we're seeing within this marketplace, while we've seen these tariffs and things like that drive these prices down. Prices have been able to rebound as the rhetoric and everything has died down over the last week and a half or so. And there's still some positives out there in this marketplace because we are in such a global market.
China has a population of nearly 1.4 billion, and King says the growing middle class has made the country one of the largest consumers of pork.
We don't really think a lot about food here in the United States because such a small portion of our income goes to purchasing food overall. But you think about somebody who's living day to day, they've been eating rice every day, or they've just been eating just subsistence. When they start to make a little bit of extra money, that extra dollar goes to purchase protein.
And while China grows large amounts of corn, King says they don't grow nearly enough soybeans to feed livestock.
There's some questions right now. If China does implement this 25% tariff, it will have an impact on their domestic industry because it will increase the cost for their feed millers and things like that because there's not enough soybeans in the world to go in and backfill what the U.S. would be taken out of there.
King adds that soybean growers are outside their export window during this time of the year.
Whatever China does to us right now, it matters from a market perspective, can impact what happens to prices. But from actual sales, we've already exported about 90 to 95% of what we're going to ship to China.
Right now, King says farmers in the South are planting, first corn and rice and then soybeans. They'll start their harvest in September and aim to be wrapped up by Thanksgiving. So the next export window won't open until October.
The worst case scenario is for something like this to continue on through fall. And you start to see some of these tariffs and everything implemented. From a soybean grower perspective, these things could really impact prices.
The proposed tariffs on imported steel and aluminum could also impact Arkansas manufacturers, according to Melvin Torres, the director of Western Hemisphere Trade at the Arkansas World Trade Center.
Everything from manufacturers that produce actual steel, aluminum, to supply chain businesses, small businesses that could potentially, as an example, grow rice for the brewery industry, and the brewery industry uses aluminum cans for their products.
The World Trade Center and the Arkansas District Export Council conducted a survey of businesses across the state. Then they compiled the responses from companies that use steel and aluminum. About 34% said the tariffs would have a negative impact on their business. 40% said the tariffs would increase their prices. 16% said the tariffs could lead to layoffs and loss of business. 10% said the tariffs would either have a positive impact or wouldn't have any impact on their business at all. Here's Melvin Torres.
So there is a factual process where a company knows what their impact is as a result of the tariffs. But we also see that there's certainly a psychological component to it.
Torres says Arkansas businesses import most of their steel and aluminum from China, followed by Mexico and Canada. According to the survey, 43% of the companies stated their main reason for importing the materials was because their needs weren't being met by U.S. suppliers.
Almost 14% said that it was not available at all. And they had no alternatives because of the type of product that they're manufacturing.
Right now, it's unclear when the U.S. tariffs on Chinese steel and aluminum will go into effect. But this week, China filed a complaint with the World Trade Organization and requested 60 days to consult with the U.S. Chinese leaders say the 25% tariff on steel and the 10% tariff on aluminum violate international trade rules. Also wrapped up in these negotiations are the two other countries that export steel and aluminum to the U.S., Mexico and Canada, America's partners in the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. Torres says at first, the Trump administration said those two countries would be exempt from the tariffs.
Later on, it was decided by the administration to exempt them only for 60 days. So now the process for NAFTA may be a little bit impacted as a result of the tariffs.
The president announced the tariffs as the U.S., Canada, and Mexico are renegotiating NAFTA, an agreement that Torres says Arkansas has largely benefited from. According to the World Trade Center, the state exports millions of dollars more in goods and services to Canada and Mexico than it imports. And a report from Business Roundtable estimates Arkansas production would drop by nearly $800 million if the U.S. withdraws from NAFTA. Torres says we'll likely know in a few weeks where the negotiations between the U.S. and Mexico will go.
Whether it's going to be to continue negotiations, to stop them, to to withdraw from NAFTA. It's unknown what that it's going to be, but probably before those 60 days, that that decision is going to be made by all countries.
That means Canada, too. Torres says both Canada and Mexico want to keep the steel and aluminum tariffs out of the NAFTA negotiations, since they don't see that as part of the discussion about modernizing the agreement. But it's been difficult, as the 60-day exemption period will end in a few weeks.
It seems from a visit that we just had from the Trade Investment Commissioner from Mexico last week, and from what I have discussed with different people within the D.C. area, is that there is a consensus that they want to finalize an agreement, to get into some sort of agreement.
Torres says the three countries also want to set a course of action, since Mexico will soon hold its presidential elections and the U.S. will have its midterm elections later this year. Meanwhile, Canada is having its federal election next year.
It's either we something is solved now, or the process will have to be put on hold for a long period.
While much of what was discussed in this story has not been implemented yet, both Torres and Matt King agree the uncertainty some farmers and manufacturers are feeling has already set in. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
In its annual forecast released this week, the World Trade Organization reports world trade in goods is maintaining a robust recovery, but the organization warns progress could be quickly undermined if governments resort to restrictive trade policies. Also this week, President Trump met with legislators from farming states and suggested he's open to looking into rejoining the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP. The president withdrew the U.S. from the TPP shortly after taking office last year.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Additional support provided by Penguin Ed's Barbecue, offering weekend breakfast each Saturday and Sunday, 7 to 11 a.m. at the Mission and Crossover location in Fayetteville. Menu items include quiche, pancakes, breakfast tacos, and more. PenguinEds.com. The City of Bella Vista will hold a citywide garage sale the last weekend of April, the 27th and 28th. Any and all residents can participate and input their garage sale address on the online map available at bellavistaar.gov. Interested businesses or food trucks can email Cassie at clapp@bellavistaar.gov for information.
A robbery at the Fort Smith Museum of History is prompting new security measures for the nonprofit organization. Earlier this week, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda traveled to the River Valley to learn more about the stolen artifact and the next course of action for museum staff. She has this report.
Last month, a gold lizard pin that once belonged to Judge Isaac Parker was stolen from the Fort Smith Museum of History. Executive Director Lisa Gramlich says it was the first time an artifact had been taken in her 10 years with the museum.
I discovered the pin was missing on a Thursday in March. Well, by Saturday morning, the pin was back. That was quite a relief. That was wonderful. It's back. You know, the case is not solved yet completely, but the pin is back and locked up. So that was just a relief to have it returned and safe and sound.
Gramlich says this priceless artifact has a wonderful history. The pin used to be an earring worn by Judge Parker's wife.
An admirer gave her a gold nugget from the gold rush. And her parents, or she or her parents, had them made into earrings. They were sent to Tiffany in New York. And so she had these pretty gold and diamond lizard earrings. Well, she lost an earring, and when she kept the other one. When she married Isaac, she had it made into a stick pin. She gave it to him for a wedding present on their wedding day in 1861. So Isaac, Judge Parker, wore it as a stick pin, and he frequently wore it through the years. And the pin came to the museum in 1990, was donated by a great-grandson of Judge Parker, James Bailey Parker. Now, he had the stick pin made into a tie tack and wore it as a tie tack. So currently, it's more of a tie tack than a pin. But it's a wonderful story, and of course, there's only one. You can't replace that.
Luckily, the pin didn't have to be replaced thanks to an anonymous phone call that led to its return. While the story has a happy ending, it has been a trying situation for Gramlich.
Oh, I was sick. I felt sick and just heartbroken because, I mean, you can't replace this. Yeah, you absolutely can't replace it. I did contact Tiffany in New York. They really can't provide a replacement cost because, of course, it's irreplaceable. But I am working with the archives to determine exactly when the earrings were first manufactured. I know if they have records, I think that would be really interesting to have copies of that. So I'm working on that.
Because the pin is rare, Executive Director Lisa Gramlich says she's put it on display sparingly over the years. When it was stolen, the pin and a handful of other artifacts were locked in a tall display case near a Judge Parker exhibit on the second floor of the museum.
Typically, there are no staff up there. The people who work at the front desk pretty much tend to stay downstairs. Of course, we don't have a guard or anything like that. We are a private nonprofit and always struggling for funds. So we don't have a large staff, and so they're usually kept at the front desk area where action happens. So yes, there are times when nobody's on the second floor. There's a camera on Judge Parker's courtroom, but not actually on the case where the pin was located. And I had never put it on the first floor where it's a little more secure because I felt like it needed to be displayed with the courtroom exhibit. But you learn lessons the hard way sometimes.
Moving forward, Gramlich says they've discussed increasing security by adding more alarms for significant artifacts. They're also considering purchasing more cameras to help surveil the 62,000 square foot building.
To cover things, I talked to our security company that currently does our alarm system, and to get a really good view of, say, one of the galleries, you need more than one camera, yes, per space. And so we're looking right now at a 32-camera DVR. That's what we're looking at currently. And so we're working on that, and that will be our next major expense.
To purchase the DVR and 16 cameras, Gramlich says it'll cost the museum about $3,500, and they can continue to add more cameras as they can afford them. To help purchase some of the security upgrades, she says they're looking into organizing a fundraising event.
We hope to have a welcome home Judge Parker stick pin party. We're looking at that perhaps in the summer, and have as a fundraiser where all money would be go toward our security system.
As part of the Fort Smith Bicentennial Celebration, the museum is hosting a 19th century living history ball from 7 to 9 Saturday evening that will include live music, traditional dances, and period refreshments. Tickets are $10 for adults and $5 for children 8 and older. More information is available at fortsmithmuseum.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. The Komen Ozark Race for the Cure is celebrating its 20th anniversary this month. Yesterday, the nonprofit marked the grand opening of its race registration office at Pinnacle Hills Promenade in Rogers with a ribbon-cutting ceremony. Executive Director Lauren Marquette says over the last two decades, the Northwest Arkansas affiliate has given $11 million to local community grants.
We've also given $3.75 million to breast cancer research alone. So, and that's just our little affiliate here. So we live in such an engaged and supportive community. We're immensely thankful to every one of you that are here today. And I do want to say that this race is not about awareness. It's more about action. And we want to make sure that we have the greatest impact and that we're making a big impact, and that we're more than pink. Pink is awesome, it's our signature color, but that we want to make sure that we're moving from pink to impact and to action as well.
Marquette says when people give, 75% of their donation supports local women.
It's helping women make sure that they're not deciding whether or not to put food on their kids' table versus going into treatment. We have some amazing breast health navigators that make sure that women stay in treatment. I've heard stories about them tracking down women who have missed an appointment and going to their house and taking them to the clinic, which is amazing.
Rogers Mayor Greg Hines says the Race for the Cure is a true community event.
It's about finding a cure for breast cancer. It's about honoring those who have beat breast cancer. It's about surrounding and hugging up those that maybe just got the diagnosis yesterday. But it's also about tying the whole community together. And it's an opportunity for our young folks to volunteer and to become full members of our community by inspiring that service heart, whereby you get the opportunity to put somebody else's needs above your own.
20th annual race is April 28th at Pinnacle Hills Promenade. More information is available at ColemanOzark.org. Big sports weekend this weekend. The University of Arkansas women's golf team, ranked third in the nation, closes out the regular season today and tomorrow at a tournament in Athens, Georgia. The SEC championships then are scheduled for next weekend in Birmingham, Alabama. The Arkansas Razorback baseball team will, weather permitting, try to even their weekend series with South Carolina tonight. In last night's series opener, Arkansas lost 3-2 to the Gamecocks in Fayetteville. Tonight's game at Baum Stadium is scheduled to begin at 6:30. Arkansas now 25-10 overall, 8-5 in SEC contests. Last night, by the way, already the 13th one-run game of the year for the Razorbacks. A series of baseball games between the University of Arkansas, Fort Smith, and Rogers State will not begin today because of the forecast that includes rain and high winds. The series in Claremore, Oklahoma, will now begin tomorrow with a 2 p.m. doubleheader. And the Northwest Arkansas Naturals continue their road trip tonight in Corpus Christi after losing to the Hooks 5-2 last night. The Nats remain in Texas through the weekend and return to Arvest Ballpark in Springdale on April 19th. And the Arkansas Razorback softball team is back home tonight if the rain stays away. Arkansas is scheduled to host Alabama tonight, tomorrow morning, and Sunday afternoon, all three games at Bogle Park. And there are, again, weather permitting, plenty of other chances to see athletes in action in the region this weekend. The 41st annual Joe Martin Stage Race continues through Sunday afternoon. Races today finish on Church Street in downtown Fayetteville. Saturday's time trials are at Devil's Den State Park. Sunday's amateur race includes a course through Prairie Grove and Hogeye. And Sunday's criterium is near the Fayetteville Square. Full schedules are available at joemartinstagerace.com. And the John McDonnell Invitational on the University of Arkansas campus continues today and tomorrow with some of the top collegiate track squads in the country. Finally, the 42nd annual Hogeye Marathon and adjacent events begin tomorrow. The marathon starts on Emma Avenue in downtown Springdale tomorrow morning.
Support for 91.3 comes from Westwood Gardens, featuring locally grown annuals, perennials, roses, vegetables, and herbs, as well as trees and shrubs. Spring garden supplies available at all four locations in Northwest Arkansas. WestwoodGardens.com for more. Additional support comes from Malco Theaters, offering a variety of special showings, including the Saturday Metropolitan Opera in HD, rock concerts and music events, special live screenings, and more. Tickets and event schedule available online at Malco.com. The 8th Annual Hogeye Kids Marathon Overtime will be Saturday, April 14th at Luther George Park in Springdale, beginning at 2 p.m. Children from 5 to 13 years old or kindergarten through 8th grade may register and log activities, counting 20 minutes of activity for each half mile, and kids and adults may participate in the 2-mile fun run. Information and registration at hogeyemarathon.com/kids.
It is Friday the 13th, 2018. This is Ozarks at Large. Becca Martin Brown, features editor of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, is with me.
And thank goodness Kyle doesn't believe in anything like bad luck or Bigfoot's coming to get you on Friday the 13th.
No, it's just another day.
Okay. But even though he's not worried about it, it might be a little bit.
All right.
I can't shove four-leaf clovers through the mic. So I thought I'd come up with some things that would make you feel lucky because you live here.
Oh, I like this idea.
And every single one of them, every single one of them is $5 or free.
Oh, okay. Inexpensive.
So, the featured event happens to be in Batesville, which is far away.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the only one of its kind, and it's got men in kilts.
Bagpipes included?
Yes.
Okay.
It's the Arkansas Scottish Festival, which has been going on for 39 years. Tomorrow, let's see, they're going to have bagpipes and Highland dancing and sheepdog demonstrations and drumming competitions and a British car show and a book sale and soccer, and they're going to have Highland games.
That's where they throw they have the caber toss and whatnot.
They've taken a few years off from that.
Oh, from the caber toss?
Well, from Highland Games.
Oh, I see.
Well, because a caber got tossed
it's gonna happen.
Somewhere it wasn't supposed to go. But they've planned around that now.
And if you don't know, a caber looks like a telephone pole that you heave.
Right.
So that's why things can go wrong.
And so this year, they've got athletes who are professionals who are invited for the occasion.
I think that's a wise move.
So it could be really cool. And there'll be children's activities. And then on Sunday, they have other things going on, you know, through the day. And all of it's free. So that's the featured one. If you want to find out more, you can look at lyon.edu/scottfest.
L-Y-O-N.
And scottfest with one T. But there's all sorts of things closer to home. The Inverse Performance Festival is all weekend at various places. You can find information in What's Up from last week and online.
Started yesterday.
And it's free. And then tomorrow, Birds and Breakfast at 9 o'clock at Hobbs State Park. Then Marshallese Culture Day.
At Shiloh Museum.
At Shiloh Museum from 10 to 4. They're building a traditional Marshallese wooden canoe. That's free. There's an astronomy program at the Springdale Public Library, actually outside at Murphy Park from 10:30 to noon. It's free. Dorothy and Oz, a touring production by the Arkansas Art Center's Children's Theater at 10:30 at the Fayetteville Public Library. You want to come in on the chorus? It's free.
Oh, yes. Okay. I was thinking of a song from The Wizard of Oz. I'm sorry.
Let's see. Teatro de Ocasión is doing a show in Spanish at the Art Center of the Ozarks at 11 and 4.
That's in Springdale.
It's called One Morning I Left, and it's $5 a ticket. Pettigrew Day is tomorrow out in Madison County on Arkansas 16. It's $5 for dinner, and they're going to have fried potatoes and onions. Sona Chamber Singers doing American folk songs at the Fayetteville Public Library at 2 o'clock tomorrow. It's free. And then you could go out to the Weddington Volunteer Fire Department and get spaghetti supper, which is a benefit for the fire department for uniforms and stuff they need. It's $6. I cheat.
Okay, well.
Or you can go up to Pea Ridge, or actually Garfield, sorry, to the NEBCO Fire Department, and they're having music at the firehouse.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
With the Black Oak Band from 7 to 9, and it is
free.
And then on Sunday, Arkansas Staged is doing a really unique play called White Rabbit, Red Rabbit. Stars Chris Stoker, who won't know what he's doing till he gets there.
Yeah, the script isn't, he hasn't seen it until it's handed to him.
Right. And that's a $5 donation.
At 21C Museum Hotel.
At 21C Museum Hotel.
Okay. Thank you.
That should make you happy you live here.
I think so. Inexpensively.
Yes.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
You know, I thought Mardi Gras happened all over the world and people celebrated and there was music in the streets. I just imagined this is what the universe is like.
That's New Orleans singer Sasha Mazikowski, and I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz. This week, I'll feature music and an interview from Sasha, along with music you'll be able to hear at the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series beginning in June. Shades of Jazz, this Friday and Saturday, right here on KUAF.
Wednesday on Ozarks at Large, we heard music from John Charles, the stage name for local musician and songwriter Chris Mastin. He and Meredith Kimbrough, who performs as Magnolia, will perform tomorrow night at Dixon Street Pub in Fayetteville. On this edition of Ozarks at Large, we hear more from the recent sit-down with Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis, starting with the origin story behind the name John Charles.
I go by John Charles, and that is a name I made up when I was really trash when I was 20, and it was a name I gave to a cop. He's like, I was wearing women's clothing because it was the type of party it was, and I didn't have my ID on me, so I was like, for some reason they got me to talk to the cops. The cops came and they got me to talk to them. I was like passed out, so I go down there and they're like, first of all, I was like, y'all aren't supposed to be here. Like, we have a fence. I don't know. I thought I was like being all legal or whatever. We have a fence and y'all can't just open it. And they're like, okay, whatever. And then they're like, what's your name, sir? And I was like, John Charles. And then I actually didn't remember that, but someone told me it later. And then I used to have like a personality, that drunk personality, and I've just kind of used that to try to produce something positive from it, I guess.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, I guess.
So give us a taste of something positive.
So I don't know if this is actually not positive.
Okay, that's fair.
But this song is called Get Some Air Under It, which is something my mom used to always say. And, I'll just play it.
All right. Very nice.
Thank you.
That's quite a bit different from the music of the Chads, which is the band you're with that you were with when you were here last time.
Right. Yeah, that's a lot different. This is more like me, I guess. That band is more like 22-year-old me, and we're still doing it. Yeah.
What does this give you that the Chads doesn't, or music like, you know, that hard punk rock?
I decided that I wanted to be like really vulnerable with music, and I love playing punk rock music, but no one ever really hears what you're saying. You're just kind of yelling and you're like, oh, he's probably saying something back there, but we're usually not actually saying a lot of whole words or like actual lyrics. But so I wanted to just get back to songwriting, and I wanted to kind of just bear it all as best I could. And I wrote this song, actually. I was supposed to be doing something else, and I'm actually a really lazy person, so I worked on this instead of doing the thing I was supposed to do. So
I can dig it.
Yeah.
So, Mary, you also bear a lot in your songwriting.
Oh, yeah.
What kind of outlet does that give you?
Well, as you know, I'm in a bunch of other bands, too, mainly doing, like, singing background and, you know, singing other people's songs. And I've been writing songs for a long time, but it's taken me a really, really long time to not be such a wreck that I could get out and play them for people. I don't know what it gives me. It honestly just gives me like heartburn, you know, to do it, but I'm just trying to do it anyway, because right. I don't know. I wrote them, so I might as well play them.
Well, and you've told me before that you consider singing to be your instrument, yet you have a guitar with you.
I do.
I've seen you play washboard and drums.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is it about voice that is so precious to you?
I don't know if it's precious. It's just the thing that I can do the best. I don't really like playing guitar. I just do that to kind of, you know, write songs and have something to sing over. I prefer to play washboard and drums. But yeah, I don't know. It's just the thing that I do. I don't know if I thought a lot about it.
That's fair. That's yeah. fair. Do you want to give us a taste?
Yeah, let's do one. This is a song called Follow Me Down. Eric and I were part of a songwriting group for a long time where you'd get a little phrase and have to write a song in a week with the phrase in it. And what was the phrase that week? Keep your hands where I can see them. And so this was that song.
Thank you.
Follow me down if you dare. Follow me down if you dare. Follow me down if you dare.
Now, on stage, you go by Magnolia.
I do.
Where's that from? I mean, you mentioned Magnolias in that last song.
Right.
Is that the genesis?
Unrelated.
Okay.
Well, so bouncing off of Mastin's drunk personality, the original name for this solo project was actually Tammy Duane.
Right.
I actually love that.
Yeah, who is my drunk personality. But I had some people encourage me not to go that route. So I don't know. I couldn't really think of anything else. I like Magnolia trees. I got one in my yard.
Yeah.
I was like, that'll do.
I think that's all the questions I have. Mary, Eric, would you mind playing one more to take us out?
Let's do it.
Don't mind at all. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for coming in. What's this one gonna be?
Neptune's Daughter. Child of the deep, her dreams are green and glowing things. A mystery so sweet you can't help but to believe her. You can't make me leave you there, buried underwater. I've never seen a rolling stone so quiet and so still. You can believe that you know somebody, but you never will. When a person pushes you away with both their hands, you gotta let it go. You don't have to understand it. You can't make me leave you there, buried underwater. You're not Neptune's only daughter. And it all feels truth.
You get the sense that she's been lost since the beginning. I guess she's figured it out now. Time is unforgiving.
That was Chris Mastin and Meredith Kimbrough speaking with Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio late last month. We also heard the slide guitar stylings of Eric Whithans. Tomorrow night, they'll perform at Dixon Street Pub in Fayetteville. That show begins at 8 p.m. Admission free.
91.3 is supported by the Walmart Museum, a family-friendly experience featuring interactive displays on the history of Walmart, Walton's Five and Dime, and the Spark Cafe Soda Fountain. Located on the square in downtown Bentonville, it's open daily until 9 p.m. Admission is free. 273-1329 or walmartmuseum.com.
A listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Berryville, Ozarks at Large. A production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellum. Sunday morning at 9, we'll have Weekend Ozarks at Large. Big thanks to the folks behind the apparel, merchandising, and product development in Clothes Fashion Show that took place last night in Fayetteville. The very cool thing about it, so many different colleges on the University of Arkansas campus working together for the fashion show. There was the School of Human and Environmental Sciences. There was Computer Science, Computer Engineering, the Walton College of Business, the Tesseract Center, and the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences. All sorts of folks, and Elkins High School students all working together. We were very happy to be part of that, Ozarks at Large and KUAF, last night at the Town Center in Fayetteville. If you'd like to listen to Ozarks at Large on your schedule, you can do that for free. Subscribe to us as a podcast. We are available for free through iTunes and Stitcher. You can also go to the website KUAF.com. or OzarksAtLarge.com and find some recent individual stories, interviews, and complete shows. And there is the free app that's for many smartphones and tablets. All of those ways to listen to KUAF and our HD show, HD signals as well, the All Classical HD2, All Jazz HD3. Thanks a lot. Have a great rest of your Friday.